on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 90-year-old Jim Roach of Las Vegas, Nevada. He grew up in Ogden, Utah, where at the age of 18, he decided he was going to be a pilot. Jim would spend 30 years in the Air Force, some really unique duty during the 1960s, both in Europe and Southeast Asia. But during World War II, he was stationed in Venosa, Italy, flying B-24 Liberators with the 830th Squadron of the 485th Bomb Group. Your first mission, again, 20 years old, 10-man crew, first B-24 mission. Do you remember feeling a little nervousness, anxiety?
This is what happened. The first mission I flew was I went as an observer on with another crew.
Mm-hmm.
The second mission, we had an experienced co-pilot go with us, and then from then on, we were on our own. But, I mean, of course, I felt responsible for the crew. I mean, it went with the territory. That was something you accepted, something you knew that was there.
Did you feel comfortable in the cockpit of a B-24?
Yes. After a while, flying any airplane, you become accustomed to it in a hurry. Everything's natural. I mean, it's all there. It just comes to you. It's automatic, so mm-hmm. to speak.
I want to talk about some of your missions, but before I forget, I'm just looking at this picture of your crew again, and as was very common during World War II, always some thought-provoking or entertaining nose art on the front of these bombers. And what'd you say the name of this plane was?
Miss Minooki.
Miss Minooki.
Yeah, M-I-S-S, then Minooki.
Uh-huh. I'm sure that was a conversation starter. And that was one of the many planes that you flew. This other photo that you've got, and again, this is at hometownheroesradio.com. I've had so many guys on this show talk about flying through anti-aircraft artillery, and you can't avoid it. You're flying in formation. You've got to fly straight through. And they say, well, the flak was so thick you could walk across it. And in this photo of one of your missions to Vienna, that's really what it looks like. I mean, how do you find space for an airplane between these bursts of flak?
A lot of them didn't.
Yeah.
A lot of them didn't. I remember one time an airplane was going down on our right wing, off of our right wing. And I called the tail gunner and told him to count. We were supposed to count the parachutes. I called him to count the parachutes, and I was choked up. I could hardly speak. Because it was so close, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Right next to it.
And you always know it could have been you, but in that circumstance, you really know it, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but it's, as I said earlier, it's always the next guy. That's not you. You're always going to be okay.
But on those Vienna missions, when you see those black clouds in front of you and you know you're going to fly straight through them, what goes through your mind right before you enter that zone?
Well, pucker.
Yeah? Grit your teeth a little bit?
Pardon?
Do you grit your teeth a little bit?
Well, I don't know how you react. I don't know. You just tighten up, I guess.
And what does that sound like when you fly through that flak?
We had some shrapnel hit the aircraft. You could hear that.
Yeah.
But no one on my crew was ever wounded. We never suffered any major damage. And it just have to be so lucky, you know.
Yeah. And that picture of a Vienna mission underscores how important that spot was to the enemy, that they would protect it with pretty heavy forces. And you guys heard how many guns they had?
Intel informed us that Vienna was ringed with 400 German 88s. And I can believe it.
That's a little intimidating, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And then you see other planes going down right off your wing.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You've still got to fly through and make sure those bombs get released.
Well, you got to hope you come out on the other end, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to make light of it, but that's how it was. I mean, you know, there's nothing you could do. Hold formation, go on through, and pray that you didn't get hit.
Amen. And you flew 15 of those bombing missions in World War II, just the start of a long career in the skies for our military. Of those 15 World War II missions, what would you say was the most hair-raising moment, or the moment that came closest to making you wonder, hey, am I going to be around tomorrow?
Well, it's that when they went off of our right wing was all shot up, and they were leaving it. You could see the parachutes coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about as close as I can remember.
So that means they had the altitude right, and they were just...
They were unfortunate, and they were hit by a burst of flak, obviously.
Yeah.
Brought them down.
What about enemy fighters? Did you encounter any of that?
No, we towards the end of the war, and we had the Tuskegee Airmen.
Uh-huh.
They were our escorts.
They're red-tailed P-51s?
Yes, and there were fighters in the area, But these guys took care of us, and they drove them all off. I was never subjected to an enemy aircraft attack.
So when you see a photograph of one of those P-51s with a red tail, that's a pretty good feeling for you. Brings back good memories.
Yeah, and I used to listen to their conversation, talking to each other, and their lingo, it's almost another language. Because I remember one day, I'll never forget it. This guy says, "Hey, Roy, there's a boomer down there calling you." And I thought, that was the way they spoke.
Well, and I guess it's important to point out that at this time, and the Air Force would be the first branch of service to integrate, but at this time during World War II, the military was still segregated.
Oh, yeah.
So the black pilots were separate. And you would probably have interesting perspective on this, because certainly they protected your hide on those bombing runs. Did you get the sense as history unfolded that the way those men served in World War II kind of paved the way for the civil rights movement, or the way things would be integrated later?
I definitely feel that they had a lot to do with it.
So those 15 missions, you're able to bring your plane back every time, but that doesn't mean that you are without emergency landings, even on a spot where you can read a history book that says, oh, no multi-engine bomber like that ever landed or took off on a strip that small. Tell me about that emergency landing strip on the island.
Okay. It was a 2,200-foot PSP strip, pierced steel planking strip.
Uh-huh. And that's short. That's a short runway.
Yeah. The minimum length of a runway for a B-24 was supposed to be 6,000 feet. We had a 5,000-foot PSP strip. That was our home base.
Right.
1,000 feet short. But in this book that Stephen Ambrose wrote, he wrote that no four-engine aircraft ever landed and took off from the island of Vis. Well, I know that's true. That's one of the things I was going to write to him about, telling him about.
You know it's not true.
I personally, and I not only did I do it, I knew other guys that landed there. Extremely short of fuel, and got some fuel and went on home.
And this is a small island in the Adriatic?
Just off the coast of Yugoslavia, the island of Vis, V-I-S.
Right. So what were the circumstances that led you to have to resort to landing there? Because I'm sure you never wanted to have to land there.
Well, the leader, the guy that led the group that day, was a 26-year-old West Point graduate, and he's lieutenant colonel. He'd moved up rapidly. We got off late, and he was trying to get the group into the stream where we were supposed to be. We're talking about 1,000 B-24s.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the stream. Well, for some reason, he thought we should try to get into the stream. He pulled too much power. And we all, I don't think more than a couple of airplanes made it back to base that day, including him.
Mm.
He was on the island of Vis out of fuel. And that was the second mission he screwed up. And he took him out. When you went up north, went up to Germany, you had a primary target, a secondary target, and a tertiary target, and targets of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
He led the entire group up there. Back, they salvaged their bombs in the Adriatic.
Mm.
And that was the end of him. They got rid of him. He was done. But that's how we ran out of fuel.
You didn't have fuel to get back to your base.
No, we didn't have enough.
So you had no choice but to land on this tiny strip.
Yes.
Was that a little nerve-wracking?
Well, it was tight. I knew we didn't have a lot of room to spare. But being the aviator that I was, I guess I'm being boastful now, but I just went in there and got it on the ground. And when the next day we didn't get out of there that day. There's so many airplanes there.
Yeah.
Next day we got our fuel and away we went.
Did you have to warn your crew before you touched down there that this might be a little tight?
No.
That they needed to brace themselves?
No. When I saw that airstrip, I knew we were home free. And we went in and just put it on the ground, and that was it. Spent the night there and got fuel and went home the next day. And one of the crew chiefs whose airplane I had flown on more than one occasion, he met me when we landed. And he asked me, he said, was aircraft such and such there on the island of Vis? I said, no, he wasn't there. See, a lot of them didn't make it to Vis. A lot of them bailed out over in Yugoslavia. Very truthful. A lot of them did not make it that far to Vis.
And if they did bail and come down safely in Yugoslavia, they were probably either captured by the enemy or smuggled out by the underground.
Yes.
And that wasn't a scenario you were looking forward to.
No, not necessarily, no.
Over the years, have you ever looked at that? I mean, I know you've had reunions. There were plenty of people from your bomb group who died. There were planes that were shot down, planes that were lost. I'm sure there were guys who did become prisoners of war.
Oh, yes.
Have you ever looked at that and thought, well, how come I'm the one who had my experience?
It's always the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not you. You're not going to be the one that gets shot down. You're not going to be the one that gets taken prisoner. You're not going to have to bail out. You're going to go come back home just like you should.
Flying those Liberators, what did you come to appreciate about that aircraft? Because I've heard the B-17 guys knock the B-24 and they call it a flying anvil, or they say their plane was better or whatever. What did you like about it?
Well, I liked it because it was a stable aircraft. I mean, it was a steady airplane. It had far better engines than the B-17. We had Pratt & Whitney engines.
Mm-hmm.
The B-17 had Wright Cyclone engines. And it was a proven fact that our engines were better than the B-17's engines. The B-17 was a more sturdy aircraft. It would take more punishment than the B-24. But we had better engines, and that was a very, very comforting feeling.
Did you ever have to fly on fewer than four engines? Did you ever lose an engine?
I shot one time. I had one engine shot out one time on one mission. That's all. Nobody was ever hurt on my crew.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're proud of that.
Well, I'm not proud of it. It's the luck of the draw. I keep telling you, we're lucky. The guy next to you gets shot down, and you don't. You don't even get wounded. You don't get torn, get shot up. You know, it has to be luck. That's all you can say.
What were the kind of targets that you guys were dropping your bombs on?
Mostly it was railroad yards, and Vienna had a lot of munitions factories there.
Mm-hmm.
A tank factory. The Hermann Göring Tank Works was in Vienna, and we were after that. I remember that one.
Was it a big deal when Germany surrendered, when you got that news?
Well, we were very, very happy. We're going home.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. We took a while to get to that. We flew an airplane home.
That's a good way to get home, as opposed to on a ship.
Yeah, we made it home in about a week.
And so you come home from the war. You're not even 21 years old yet.
No.
But you've got all this experience, and you probably had some decisions to make. You're going to stay in the service? You're going to go to college? What are you going
to
do?
I decided to get out of the Air Force and go to college,
mm-hmm.
which I did.
And where was that?
Utah State.
Uh-huh.
Up in Logan, Utah.
Beautiful spot.
It is. It's really a nice school. Mm-hmm. Very nice school.
And how was it that you met a young lady from your hometown?
Before going to Utah State, I was going to a junior college in Ogden, and that's where we met. She was there also.
Uh-huh. What caught your eye?
Well, it's not what caught my eye, it's what caught her eye.
Uh-huh. Hot pilot, huh?
I have to tease her about that. One time we were at a social gathering, and this lady, the mother-in-law of the guy that was hosting the party, they were from someplace in Arkansas, and they were people of means. They owned a newspaper and two automobile agencies and all that stuff. And she cornered me and was talking to me. And Pat came in and into the conversation. She said, "Guess what? It was just 2 years ago today that we had our first date." And I turned to this lady and I said, "Pat, the reason that Pat remembers it so well is because she went out the next day and bought two pair of running shoes." And that gal thought that was so funny. She really liked that.
Well, you guys have kept pace with each other ever since, 66 years now. But right after you got married, I guess you decided to go back into the Air Force?
Well, I graduated in 1950, and things weren't going, there was not much activity in the world at that time, you know, business world, things were kind of slow. So I went back in the Air Force, and as I said, I always liked being around airplanes. I liked being around guys that flew them, and I liked to fly them, so I decided to stay.
And that would mean some fascinating duty during the Cold War and some dangerous missions in the Vietnam War, where Jim earned the Distinguished Flying Cross. Break time again, but we'll explore those other highlights from a 30-year Air Force career when we come back. Find photos and video of Jim on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.